Walnut Wednesday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. Hello, I'm Lori Boyer, your host, and we start off the show with a report from Vicki Boyd, where she talks with a walnut producer about marketing walnut butter. And then Taylor Charlstrom will be in. He'll have a report on proposed spending on water infrastructure in California from the California Farm Water Works Coalition's Mike Wade. It all gets started right after this.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, delivering value to growers and handlers with advocacy, research programs, and walnut promotions. Doing more together.
Leon Echepar, who grows walnuts and almonds with his family near Maxwell, was at a crossroads about 7 years ago. A fourth-generation farmer and partner in Emerald Farms, Echepar said he wanted to do more. But what? Become a handler? Sell internationally? Eventually, he and his business partner, Kevin Amator, decided to make nut butters. Amator also grows walnuts, as well as runs a hulling and shelling operation.
Well, we were going to come out with an almond butter and decided that that market was pretty saturated. So from that, we went to a California Walnut Board meeting, and they had started developing some walnut butters. And so we decided that that was what we were going to take off with and run.
Developing a walnut butter that had a shelf life of 18 months wasn't easy. One challenge was walnuts can oxidize easily because of their high fatty acid content and get rancid. But Echepar said they kept at it.
Well, walnuts are a pretty fickle nut. So it took a lot of R&D, a lot of testing, a lot of money with a food science company to develop something that was shelf stable. So, you know, in the end, you just don't give up on something you have a passion for, right? And in the end, we prevailed.
In the end, he said they settled on three flavors: original, maple, and salted caramel.
Well, original, we wanted the quintessential walnut flavor. It has a little bit of vanilla and a little bit of cane sugar to kind of help with the flavors. But in general, it tastes like walnuts. That's kind of what we get from it. And the maple, I love maple. And that was one of the inspirations of the maple. And salted caramel, we want to do a honey flavor because honey, everybody loves honey, right? But the honey just didn't mix well with the walnut. So that was about when salted caramel was becoming a big hit. And so we told Mattson to try a caramel, and they knocked it out of the park. It's now one of our best-selling flavors.
Echepar said they decided to call the walnut butter Wellnut, which plays off of wellness and walnuts. After all, walnuts are chock full of a healthy plant-based omega-3 essential fatty acid.
Well, it's kind of a combination of wellness and walnut because walnuts are so good for you. And we really wanted to focus on the health benefits of walnuts and the wellness factor. And so you got wellness and walnut is a walnut.
The butters are processed right on their farm. In addition, they co-pack for other companies under the Newtopia Foods name. Echepar said he likes to refer to their operation as Farm to Spoon since they grow, process, and market the walnut butter themselves. Intertwining every decision, whether on the farm or with the walnut butter, is sustainability. Echepar said it begins with healthy soils, which produce healthy trees, but it extends far beyond that.
From a farming standpoint, I really focus on sustainability. And that's not just it being the fluff word that everybody talks about. It is truly living it, trying to decrease the amount of chemicals that we're using, use water appropriately, have a really good work environment for our employees, just, you know, happy and healthy. In my mind, that's what sustainability is all about. You know, you can say, yes, I use solar and we use natural gas to power our irrigation motors, but truly, I want something that's sustainable that can go for future generations, not just the here and now and what helps my pocketbook.
Echepar markets Wellnut Walnut Butter direct to consumers as well as through nationwide retailers.
We're in Sprouts nationwide, except there's a select few Sprouts we're not in. Amazon and on our website, walnutfarms.com.
This segment was sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, working together to advance the industry. Together, we can do more.
Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Tricor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com.
And here's Taylor Charlstrom in a report about proposed water infrastructure spending in California.
Water and water infrastructure are still top of mind for growers, but maybe not necessarily the state of California. The state can't improve its water supply or get it to its destination without both the physical conveyance and the management system functioning. And the success of both requires collaboration, not only among water users, but also from the state of California. In 2021, Congress passed a historic bipartisan infrastructure bill that allocates funds for a wide range of infrastructure projects. Governor Newsom also included water infrastructure spending in the state budget. However, according to California Farm Water Coalition's Mike Wade, a line item in a piece of legislation or budget doesn't save, create, or move one drop of water. For this reason, the state of water in California still looks somewhat bleak.
Right now, the water supply situation in California is pretty bad. Our reservoir levels are pretty low. We're looking at most of the 10 major reservoirs in the state are at 50 or 60% of capacity, or 50 or 60% of their annual average. So it's a bad situation. And it's been months since we've had any real measurable rain. And we're looking at the closing the storm door anytime now and probably have little, if any, through the remainder of the year.
The Bureau of Reclamation has released a preliminary plan to spend $1.66 billion of the $8.3 billion allocated for Western water infrastructure by the Federal Infrastructure Bill. However, a lot of these projects that the money would be allocated for are long-term. Long-term projects aren't going to fix the issues that the state needs to fix right now.
In a year like this, the opportunities for water supply generally come from the water that we already have in storage and water that could be transferred from areas that have more abundant supplies to areas that really have the need. And at the state level, the state has the ability to provide an open door for as much water as possible to be transferred through the Delta. For instance, typically there's an amount that's taken off the top as a transfer amount that, for instance, 30% would come off the top in water that moves through the Delta. And the state can waive that rule and allow a one-to-one ratio of water that gets sold and delivered into the Delta to be transferred out to the buyer. So that would provide some short-term relief, and it's on the table, and it's something the state can do, and we hope that they'll consider it for this year. The other thing is we've got to invest in repairing and rebuilding our infrastructure. There's no better time to plan for the next drought than in the current drought, and we need to be planning and building so when the wet years come back, we can capture that water and not be in the situation we are now. If we had invested decades ago when we knew we needed to, then we would have captured more of the water going into the 2012 through 2016 drought. If we'd invested back then, we would have captured more of the flows in 2017 and 2019 when we were seeing tremendous amounts of water flowing through the system. But we didn't do that, and we're back where we were 10, 20, sometimes 30 years ago when we don't have the ability to catch the water when we can.
Some of the funding for longer-term projects in the state include $210 million for construction of water storage, groundwater storage, and conveyance project infrastructure, $100 million for aging infrastructure for major repairs and rehabilitation of facilities, $100 million for safety of dams to implement safety modifications of critical infrastructure, and $50 million for the implementation of Colorado River Basin drought contingency plans to support the goal of reducing the risk of Lake Mead and Lake Powell reaching critically low water levels. Additionally,
Governor Newsom has allocated a little over $5 billion for future water spending, and we know that $100 million in 2021 and $100 million this year potentially is going into repairing some of the canal infrastructure that we have to bring them back to their design capacity so we can move water when it's available and get it to areas that we need it. There are several big projects that are important. Sites Reservoir certainly is one that can help with multiple benefits, not only for water supply, but for Bay Delta water quality, for ecosystem restoration, for environmental flows. That's a critical project, and I think one that absolutely should be built, and we need to start on that as soon as possible. There are a couple of other smaller reservoirs, reservoir enlargement projects or off-stream facilities that are on the table that could be approved and construction started sometime soon. San Luis Reservoir in western Merced County is in the midst of a dam raise project where they would increase the capacity of the existing reservoir. And then Del Puerto Canyon has a reservoir planned, as well as Pacheco Reservoir in the Pacheco Pass, that could take high flows, as we talked about, in wet years and divert them from the system, take the peaks off of those high flows with flood water, and put them into these reservoirs so they're available for years like this.
In addition to physical infrastructure improvements, water must be managed in a way that takes a holistic approach to the environmental health and utilizes the most current science and has the flexibility to adjust as situations change and new information becomes available. The challenge is that this requires cooperation from all water users and the state.
We're going to see a transition in California in the next 20 years, certainly because of SGMA, with changes in the amount of water that we're able to pump from our groundwater aquifers. We're already seeing impacts this year on SGMA with reductions in groundwater in different basins around the San Joaquin Valley. But the long-term impact is going to be potentially 500,000 acres of fallowed farmland, just because there is not the current water supply available to irrigate those lands without tremendous amounts of groundwater pumping. And that's going away. So how do we address those fallowed farmlands? How do we pick the ones that make the most sense to fallow? And what are some of the projects we can use to transition those lands to other productive uses, whether it's for solar projects or whether it's for lower water impact farming or for ecosystem improvements with upland and wetland habitats? If there is sufficient water for those, that we can transition those farmlands into other purposes that have benefits to the valley.
Future use of these fallowed lands in California will depend on multiple factors.
Depends on where they are. It depends on what the surrounding property is like and what impacts they would have. You know, if they're lands that are in and around potential floodplains that can be restored, those are ways to get water from flood flows back into the ground for other uses. If it's on the west side where there are limited water supplies available and we've already retired a bunch of farmland, they make great sense for solar projects. They're out there on the west side. There's a lot of sunshine there in the summer, and I think that those projects that are already underway can be expanded and help. But you know, we're really focused on water, and we want to see water supplies develop to the most extent possible, and use that water to grow food, because that's really what consumers care about. That's what the public needs. We have such a small percentage of our population growing food for the rest of the people that, you know, we should be doing what we can to make sure California stays productive, that our leadership as an agriculture state and the nation stays positive, and that we continue to supply people not only in California, but across the country with fresh, healthy, affordable, nutritious food supplies.
You're listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. This show will continue with regional and national agricultural news. That's coming up next.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
In regional agricultural news here today, the Western Cape Department of Agriculture has signed a Memorandum of Understanding with the California Department of Food and Agriculture. The agreement seeks to promote cooperation in agriculture between the two entities. Western Cape Premier Alan Wynn said he was pleased to have officially signed the MOU, which he hopes will pave the way for sustainable growth in both the Western Cape and California's agricultural sectors. The purpose of the MOU is to establish a flexible framework promoting the exchange of information on climate-smart approaches to agriculture and best practice within the sector, according to Wind. California is pleased to join the Western Cape in furthering opportunities for farmers and ranchers in climate-smart agriculture. The shared commitment to connect farmers, academia, and government will help to expand on-farm adaptation of practices that benefit natural and working lands, according to the Secretary of the Californian Agriculture Department, Karen Ross. The Acting Counsel General for the U.S. Consulate, Will Stevens, was also pleased with the agreement. He said the U.S. was the Western Cape's top foreign direct investor and remarked that his country was a key partner for the province in bolstering economic growth. Wynn said the MOU would see enhanced cooperation in improving water use efficiency, particularly in groundwater modeling and remote sensing, modeling the impact of climate change on the agricultural sector, exchanging information on policies and regulations and governance models, intergovernmental and international visits, including policymakers, academic institutions and businesses, joint participation in seminars, workshops, and meetings to share practices, educate key stakeholders and promote partnerships biannually, and bringing together public, private, and academic entities bilaterally or multilaterally to co-develop new technologies and solutions. A new U.S. Department of Agriculture report shows use of no-till crop rotations, more efficient irrigation methods, and advanced technologies have climbed in recent years. The report from USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service demonstrates progress made through voluntary conservation over a 10-year period. Findings from the report will inform future conservation strategies, including USDA's efforts to tackle the climate crisis. The conservation practices on cultivated cropland, a comparison of CEAP and CEAP2 survey data modeling, was developed by USDA's Conservation Effects Assessment Project. It found significant gains for soil health and soil carbon storage, while also identifying areas where additional and targeted nutrient management strategies are needed. The latest report shows that farmers have done an outstanding job over the years in using innovative conservation strategies that help to mitigate climate change, according to NRCS Chief Terry Cosby. But he says there's more work to do. Reports like this one will help them to better understand conservation approaches and make improvements to increase positive impacts. The report will help to steer conservation efforts well into the future and to help them adapt to changing trends in production, climate, and technology. Some of the key findings include farmers increasingly adopted advanced technology, including enhanced efficiency fertilizers and variable rate fertilization to improve efficiency. More efficient conservation tillage systems, particularly no-till, became the dominant form of tillage. Use of structural practices increased, largely in combination with conservation tillage. Irrigation expanded in more humid areas, and as irrigators shifted to more efficient systems and improved water management strategies, per acre water application rates decreased by 19% and withdrawals by 7 million acre feet. Nearly 70% of all cultivated cropland had conservation crop rotations, and 28% had high biomass conservation crop rotations. Because of this increased conservation, report estimates average annual water and wind erosion dropped by 70 million and 94 million tons, respectively. Nearly 26 million additional acres of cultivated cropland were gaining soil carbon, and carbon gains on all cultivated cropland increased by over 8.8 million tons per year. Nitrogen and phosphorus losses through surface runoff declined by 3 and 6% respectively, and average annual fuel use dropped by 110 million gallons of diesel fuel equivalents, avoiding associated greenhouse gas emissions of nearly 1.2 million tons of carbon dioxide equivalents. Local Bounty Corporation, a breakthrough U.S. indoor agriculture company that combines aspects of vertical and greenhouse growing technologies, has announced it has entered into a definitive agreement to acquire California-based complementary indoor farming company, Hollandia Produce Group Incorporated, which operates under the name Pete's, for a total consideration of $122.5 million, subject to customary adjustments. The transaction consideration will be comprised of $92.5 million in cash, expected to be provided pursuant to Local Bounty's existing lending facility with Cargill and a remaining $30 million of consideration payable to shares of Local Bounty common stock. Pete's is a California-based indoor farming company with three greenhouse growing facilities, including two operating facilities in California and one under construction in Georgia, which is scheduled to begin operations in the second quarter of 2022. Pete's has distribution to approximately 10,000 retail locations across 35 U.S. states and Canadian provinces, primarily through direct relationships with blue-chip retail customers, including Albertsons, Kroger, Target, Walmart, as well as Whole Foods and Amazon Fresh. Pete's primary products include Living Butter Lettuce, where it is the leading provider with an approximate 80% share of the market within the Western U.S., as well as packaged salad and cress. Pete's has been in operation for over 50 years while focusing the last 25 years in leafy greens and has a longstanding relationship with a majority of its customers. Up next, National Agricultural News.
There's giant potential sleeping in your soil. Under drought conditions, it's never been more important to wake it up. Phycoterra, a superior soil microbial food, activates the native microbes responsible for your soil's health and water-holding capacity. Adding Phycoterra to your crop increases water retention up to 10% and optimizes crop nutrient availability. Plus, it delivers excellent mixability and application flexibility, making it easy to add to your existing crop input strategy. Visit phycoterra.com to learn how you can wake up your soil's giant potential with Phycoterra.
A bill has been introduced to streamline federal resources available to rural communities. The legislation would create an Office of Rural Prosperity in the White House to coordinate the federal government's programs supporting rural communities. Currently, there are more than 400 federal programs dedicated to helping rural communities. 13 different federal agencies have jurisdiction over the various programs, which includes over 50 offices and sub-agencies. The Rural Prosperity Act also requires the office to produce an annual comprehensive strategy for rural economic development and a Rural Prosperity Action Plan. The war in Ukraine has fueled a debate over not just high gas prices, but high fertilizer prices. USDA Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack told Commodity Classic attendees last week that soaring fertilizer prices are due to the war in Ukraine, heavy reliance on imports, high global demand, and high energy prices. But North Dakota GOP Senator John Hoeven argues White House restrictions on fossil fuel extraction are choking the ability to produce fertilizer, using the example of a coal gasification plant.
Takes coal, converts it to synthetic natural gas, and then uses that to make fertilizer, urea, anhydrous. So we're not buying it from Indonesia or anywhere else. We're producing it right here at home, but those costs that go into energy production, whether it's on coal, oil, or natural gas, all are driving up costs in everything we do.
Secretary Vilsack recently announced a $250 million Commodity Credit Corporation-backed grant program to expand domestic fertilizer production, pointing out the U.S. is the second or third top importer of the three main fertilizer ingredients. Hoeven, at a recent press conference with other GOP ag senators, argues oil and gas permit and leasing restrictions are what is discouraging domestic production.
The Biden administration needs to change course. And that's the point we're making, whether it's for energy, whether it's the food supply, for whether it's our consumers here at home trying to stop this growth in inflation, or whether it's working with our allies to support Ukraine.
The administration blames Russia, a big fertilizer exporter, for its unprovoked war on Ukraine and is providing Ukraine with military and humanitarian aid. But as with the gas price debate, Hill Republicans argue fertilizer inflation is being driven by domestic policies, not foreign events. And Representative Michelle Finchbaugh has recently introduced the Landowner Easement Act. The legislation by the Minnesota Republican would prohibit the Department of Interior from entering into a conservation easement with a term of more than 50 years. The bill would also give landowners of existing easements the option to renegotiate, renew, or buy out the easement. Finchbaugh says the legislation would stop permanent land grabs while providing a mechanism for landowners to resolve easement disputes. The American Farm Bureau Federation is seeking entrepreneurs to apply online for the 2023 Farm Bureau Ag Innovation Challenge. Now in its ninth year, the National Business Competition showcases U.S. startup companies developing innovative solutions to challenges faced by America's farmers, ranchers, and rural communities. Farm Bureau is offering $165,000 in startup funds throughout the course of the competition, which will culminate in the top 10 semifinalists competing in a live pitch competition in front of Farm Bureau members, investors, and industry representatives at the AFBF convention in January of 2023 in San Juan, Puerto Rico. AFBF President Zippy Duvall says that the Ag Innovation Challenge is an outstanding avenue for identifying and supporting startup businesses striving to solve the problems facing rural America. Applications will be open through April 29th, and the 10 semifinalist teams will be announced on September 13th. Eligibility guidelines and the competition timeline can be found online at fb.org/challenge. Tractors will be rolling into Washington, D.C. later this week for the celebration of modern agriculture on the National Mall and will be parked just outside the U.S. Department of Agriculture headquarters on Monday, March 22nd and Tuesday, March 22nd in honor of National Ag Day, which is the 22nd. This will be a half-mile hands-on display of modern equipment and technology and a first-hand view of how the latest equipment, crop inputs, data, and technology are working together to drive agriculture's tradition of producing more with less. Sprayers, harvesters, balers, tractors, and other agriculture equipment will be on site for a one-of-a-kind festival just minutes from the White House and the U.S. Capitol. The Biden administration has unveiled ambitious plans to reduce the threat of catastrophic wildfires that have plagued the West in recent summers. The Great Resignation has thrown a serious wrench into that strategy, however. The U.S. Forest Service has had chronic staffing shortages for over a decade. But amid rising wages and a fierce competition for labor across the U.S. economy, the agency faces a particularly bleak hiring picture, even as it looks to add an untold number of forest management staff to fight wildfires in what could be another tough season, carry out an aggressive new land management plan, and continue regular forest management and surveys. The Forest Service has declined to estimate just how many people it needs to hire.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.